All right, a happy Thanksgiving, everybody, to you and yours out there. Hope everybody is safe and happy on this holiday schedule. Once again, welcome to Big Blue Kickoff here on Giants.com. I am Russ Salzberg. Today I'm joined by a fellow Brooklyn native, Lance Meadow. And, hey, the number, as always, to call is 201-939-4513. On Twitter it is hashtag Giants Chat. And, listen, it's nice to be able to go into a holiday game, a Thursday night game, with a win. And certainly we haven't had winning streaks this season. You and I were talking about it off camera, Lance. I'm not saying they're going to do, you know, Coach McAdoo said last week, he says, you guys might think I'm nuts, but I believe we got a run in us. And I'm not saying they're running the table, but I think if they can get tomorrow night, I think then they got a little bit of a run in them where there's a possibility they can get a bit of a streak going. I mean, but again, this team is in no position at 2-8 to be looking past what's staring in
Absolutely.
Front of them.
Well, I mean, I think it goes back to the parity of the NFL, Russ. And what I mean by that is how you look at a schedule in the early stages of the season before the year even started. You saw the Raiders on the schedule, you saw the Cardinals on the schedule. You thought most of those teams were going to be atop the standings in the playoff mix. And now all of a sudden, as a result of injuries, the narrative for those teams has changed. So I think the outlook of the upcoming schedule, a little bit different than we had anticipated going back to September. So you have to take that into consideration. And as far as this game coming up tomorrow, this is a Redskins team that is decimated by injuries, Russ. Top to bottom.
Well, they're not going to get a pity party from
no,
the Giants.
No, not at all, because the Giants can relate in that category. Absolutely. But their offensive line, all five starters are on the injury report. They placed two guys on injured reserve this week. They lost one of their dynamic running backs in Chris Thompson. Jordan Reed, their top tight end, is banged up. I mean, we could spend the entire show going over the injury report. So it says a lot about where both of these teams are compared to where they were or where they were meant to be at the beginning of the season. I mean, Kirk Cousins and the Redskins had high hopes, and clearly the Giants did too. But you can never control the injury bug. You don't know how that's going to play out.
And look, if we're going to be honest and fair about the whole situation, the Giants got off to an awful start before the injury bug
Absolutely.
Killed
yeah.
them. So, but it certainly didn't help the situation. Having said that, though, listen, last week is last week. Doesn't do them any good, except to me, in a short week, I think it helps you in terms of momentum-wise, as opposed to coming off a loss on a short week. You know, they got a little something. The victory is still fresh in their mind. They got a little something to go into the game about. But when you look at this Giants team, I mean, I was sitting in the press box last week, and I'm looking at everybody playing at wide receiver was a backup. I mean, you think about it. Everybody was a backup. To me, I don't consider him a backup any longer, is Brett Jones. Like, Brett Jones is probably, arguably, the most pleasant surprise on the entire team this year.
I agree with you. I mean, I think the way that he stepped in at center, Weston Richburg's now on IR. He also has played guard. I would take it a step further, Russ. I would say he's probably the most versatile offensive lineman on the roster. They don't have him. You know, they're in a situation where, you know, who are they going to plug in at a variety of spots? So, you know, he's taking advantage of his playing time, and it's crazy because, I mean, he came out of the CFL where you play a little bit further away from the line of scrimmage. So year one where he was hurt, spent the entire year on IR with the Giants, didn't get a lot of reps. Year two was okay, the transitional year, and now year three has really been his coming out party. Tremendous value that they've received out of him thus far.
He's really an interesting guy. I spend a lot of time talking with Brett about the CFL because that's where he comes from, and I started my career in Toronto, so I know about the CFL, and he was talking about the team that he came from, the Calgary Stampeders. They're in the Grey Cup this week against Toronto coming up. He says to me, Russ, do you think it's going to be on ESPN? You know, because we don't have a game that day. So
he was hoping to fit into the schedule.
No,
I was going to say, did you talk about Canadian Thanksgiving, too? Could you relate to that, too?
Well,
I hope you fit that in.
Everybody was asking him yesterday.
Correct. That was his whole press conference.
About Canadian Thanksgiving. So, and I said, no, correct me if I'm wrong. Is it Canadian Thanksgiving, Columbus Day weekend? He goes, yeah, it is. But up there, they don't know about Columbus
Well,
Day
yeah.
To which somebody said, well, the way things are going around here, they might not know it around here too long anytime soon. But he certainly is a good player. But then again, you have another problem. Now DJ Fluka, who's been playing well with the toe injury, you know, some people might not understand how could a big guy like that be hampered by a toe injury, but those are all problems. And he's also played well. So now you have Greco. I'll tell you what, Chad Wheeler really stepped in last week very nicely. So listen, the attitude has always been next man up. There's no excuses tomorrow night. Not, like you say, nobody's having a pity party for him. Redskins have their own issues, but you got to go ahead and play the game. So what do you say we open up the phone line?
Absolutely.
201-939-4513. Let's go up to Maine and speak with Jason. Jason, how you doing today? You're on with Russ and Lance.
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
Doing all right, Jason.
What's going on?
Pretty good. I'm just wondering, I guess you guys have already been talking about it, but the guys we have right now, could you just go over the offensive line starters that we have going into the game and how well do you think they'll be able to do for us?
Well, you're looking at Eric Flowers at left tackle. You're looking at John Jerry at left guard. Brett Jones, who we were talking about it, at center. If DJ Fluker can't play, and right now I would say it's unlikely, then probably John Greco, who Russ just mentioned, is the next man up, and they just signed him as a free agent earlier in the week after he was on the street as a free agent. And then obviously at the right tackle spot, they're going to have a few options, but I think Chad Wheeler right now earned himself another start, even though Bobby Hart certainly could very well be in the mix as well.
Okay. Okay. Is there any news on Shepard?
Well, right now the news is I was just going to bring that up with Lance. That's a head scratcher, and quite frankly, I don't want to use the term alarming, but it's of great concern to me because it came out of the blue, and we've all had headaches. I've never had migraines, but from what I understand, and I know people who have had them, they're debilitating, where you are darn near almost paralyzed. You want to sit in the dark. But I saw him in the locker room yesterday, and I asked Sterling how he was doing, and he said, okay, but there was no smile on his face. He looked like not well. And, you know, especially with what the hell is going on with, you know, CTE and concussion protocol and everything, you're having migraine problems and headache problems. You want to be extremely careful with that. But they did, you know, when Ben McAdoo spoke with us yesterday, he didn't have answers, and they were still trying to find out answers. So, you know, it is alarming.
Oh, it's certainly surprising, considering we haven't heard of any issues, even going Nothing. Back to his college days. Normally, you have this that lingers and that it carries with you. I tell you, the one player that comes to my mind, Russ, is Percy Harvin, who was the Minnesota Vikings right. wide receiver. If you remember, he was plagued by migraines during the course of his career. He's no longer playing anymore, and it became unpredictable, where the Vikings didn't know whether they could rely on him from week to week. Now, I don't want to speculate. We don't know what's ultimately going to happen with Sterling Shepard, but the fact that he wasn't able to get through practice on a short turnaround week, I think says that they may have to hold him back this week, depending on how things play out. But it was encouraging, I think, to see what Roger Lewis and Tavares King were able to produce, especially down the stretch in overtime of that game, because if Lewis doesn't make that catch, who knows how that game plays out.
Got anything else for us, Jason?
Okay. Yeah, just one last thing. I'm just wondering, from the games you guys have seen so far, our second-round pick, I think is it Dalvin Tomlinson?
You got yes. it, yep.
Okay. I'm just wondering, I'll take this off the air, but just wondering what you guys think of him so far throughout this season, if you think he's going to be a really good player for us in the future. Thanks, guys.
Okay, thank Chase, you. Appreciate the call.
I think he's done okay. You know, I'm not about to say he's going to be a star in this league, but I think he's done okay.
Yeah, defensive tackles, I mean, even a guy like Snacks, Russ, they don't jump off the page from a statistical standpoint. Those are not going to be the guys that are going to stack up the sacks. I know Jonathan Hankins, before he left for the Colts, had that 7-sack standout season, but those numbers are going to fluctuate. I think Tomlinson, it's easy to overlook him this season, but quietly, I think he's done a very nice job. He's been a well-disciplined player for the Giants. It doesn't show up because they've had trouble stopping the run, but there's promise out of him. Do you want to see him maybe get a little bit more pressure on the quarterback? I think that comes with experience, that comes with additional reps, but for the amount of reps he's received so far in year number one, for the amount of playing time he's received, I think he's done a really nice job.
I also concur with you on getting more pressure on a quarterback at the same time, and you know, it's the hip bone's connected to the knee bone and this and that. Part of the problem, I think, is everybody on OV has been injured. JP JPP.
He's also been banged up.
Banged up and has had his ups and downs. So you kind of wonder, you know, how much that had. Like, if everybody was in there healthy, I think everybody would have more sacks. You know, listen, they're most consistent. He is at one hell of a player. I mean, I'd like to know how Snacks Harrison, this guy went undrafted. I mean, when you think about that, he went undrafted. Not only did he go undrafted, where did he go? He went to William Penn.
In Iowa.
In Iowa.
Yeah. Good luck trying to find that on the map, by the way.
Really? Yeah. You know, it always strikes me when I see some of these guys, and, you know, I've used the expression, you can teach aggressiveness. And this doesn't just apply to football. I think it applies to life in general. You can teach aggressiveness. You can't teach hunger. Hunger is not an acquired taste. Either you've had it or you never, you know, it's just hunger. It's flat out hunger. And when you see some of these undrafted free agents, for whatever the reason, where they came from or what, there's a reason. And I mean, Harrison is not he is a great player who, quite frankly, plays his ass off all the time. I mean, I call him a foxhole guy. That's the guy you want in a foxhole with you. He plays that type of style. 201.
So he'll take up probably the majority of the foxhole, Russ. So you want him in there?
Well, I'd say then I'd be under him, but that might not be a good thing either.
May want to reconsider.
Right. 201-939-4513 is the number. On Twitter, it is #GiantsChat. Let's go to our girlfriend in Brooklyn Lands and chat with Lisa. Good morning, Lisa. Happy Thanksgiving.
Morning, Russ. Hi, Lance. Happy Thanksgiving.
Same to you, Lisa.
Oh, great game. I was very happy Sunday. I was great to see that the offensive line really played well. I liked Wheeler, really. And I have to give Eric Flowers kudos. He played a good game. Fluka, loved him, but I'm sorry he's hurt. A toe can be painful. Defense, that's the defense I remember. I was very happy all in all. Question about Shepard.
Go ahead.
Sure.
Do you think the migraines could be concussion?
Well,
with a concussion that caused these migraines?
Lisa, I'm sure that's what, you know, part of they'd be looking into. I will say this, though. There was no indication whatsoever coming off that great game that he had. There was no indication at all that he had any concussion or was banged in the head. So that's why it stunned everybody when it was announced that he was not going to be able to play last week, Sunday, just because, like everybody said, I got into the press box and nobody could understand what happened.
Yeah, he was a late add to the injury report on Saturday,
right
before the Chiefs game, and obviously that didn't make his chances of playing promising. But you were alluding to, Russ, when he had 11 catches against the Niners.
Right, yeah.
He was the entire passing game, made a number of big plays, and we didn't hear about anything.
Nothing, not even
concussion-related or injury-related. So, you know, it's hard to speculate as to what triggers something like this. I mean, we're not doctors. We don't know his medical history. I don't remember hearing anything from his Oklahoma days in which he had to deal with this, and Ben McAdoo was actually asked during his presser yesterday, were you aware of a history of migraines with Sterling Shepard going back to college? And Ben McAdoo said that's a better question to ask Sterling, much more so than anybody here on the staff.
And it was the right answer. Like, some people might view that as, well, he's being vague. I can't tell you. But you're right. I mean, going back, he's not going to know from his college days or high school, whatever. So it's just, Lisa, nobody knows. I would assume that is something that they're looking into.
I remember at the Niner game, if you notice, when he made that catch, he grabbed at his leg a little bit, which I thought that would have been a problem. But when it was a migraine, I was like, sometimes you'll get a migraine. I had a friend of mine who suffered from migraines, and no joke. But now it seems like he's still suffering from it. So I was just wondering if there was a concussion protocol or something had happened.
Lisa, you're calling from Brooklyn. What are you out on, Sheepshead Bay fishing today? What's going on there? Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, were you out on the middle of Sheepshead Bay fishing? Sounds a little noisy.
Can you hear me?
Yeah,
you're
breaking up.
It sounds like she's in Floyd Bennett Field or something here. The planes are landing.
Yeah.
Can you hear me now?
We can hear you now, Lisa.
Yeah. Well, what else you got for us?
Oh, okay. I just wanted to tell you happy Thanksgiving.
Well, same to you.
Let's go blue.
All
appreciate
right.
The phone
we'll
call.
Be watching
so much.
Together tomorrow night. Thanks, Lisa. Thank you very much. Yeah, that to me came out of the blue. You know, sometimes you know. Okay, the guy got a big hit, and then you kind of think back. And actually, I went back to view the tape because I still had it, and you know, my DVR. And he, I didn't see any hits, anything significant to the head. So I don't know. You mentioned Roger Lewis, and you mentioned Tavares King. Both guys have really stepped up, but even Travis Rudolph stepped up.
He had three catches
week.
Too.
They all had three catches. You know what was interesting too, which people don't, and I laugh about this because to me it's the most idiotic thing. Some people are relating the problems or whatever goes on with the team to Odell Beckham Jr. I mean, how stupid can you be? And the truth of the matter is, he in this season where he has not been visible, obviously he's coming off his surgery, he's been very involved with all the receiving core. They look up to him. He is their leader. You know, Lewis talks about it. Travis Rudolph talks about it. He's calling these guys every day. Really, if you want to use the term, coaching them up, both spiritually and just telling them, let's go. I mean, you guys can do this. You're here for a reason, which is, you know, listen. If he's not the best receiver in the league, he's certainly arguably
he's
one
up
of
there.
The best. And I would have to say the most explosive player. So, you know, but the guys stepped up last week. Now we got to see if they can step up again tomorrow night. Let's go down now, though, to South Carolina, check in with Steve. Steve, how you doing? You're on with Russ and Lance Meadow.
I'm doing good, guys. Happy Thanksgiving.
Same to you.
Hey, I might be mistaken, but I thought I saw Coach McAdoo crack a smile yesterday for the first time since he's been there in a while.
Well, so. It's a lot easier to crack a smile when you're coming off a victory, especially with the heat that's been coming down.
And I think it's a good indicator that, you know, I'm glad to see that he's finally, you know, understood that as a leader, change starts with him. And I think that I'm looking forward to what he's going to do for us for the rest of the year. But I'm glad you guys were talking about Beckham. And a question that's been looming in my mind is, not taking anything away from Beckham. He's an outstanding receiver, a great player, great athleticism. But do you think that because of the way that the Giants play over the last couple of years, this kind of made him into that player? Because we've force-fed him the ball. I remember watching him, I think it was the Ravens last year, and they threw 10 straight plays to Beckham. You know, and that I mean, you know, he's good, but if we've given him the opportunities to be that great of a receiver, and my question, I guess, is because we're starting to change and commit to the run a little bit more, or we're seeing a more prolific offense from the Giants, do you think that he's going to be as productive in the future as he has been in the past for us?
I don't think, you know, Lance could give you his opinion. I don't think there's any question how productive he's going to be. I can tell you this. There is no doubt in the management's mind that he's going to come back better than ever. The surgery went very well. He is the hardest worker on the team. He's got too much pride. He likes being the best, so he wants to come back that way. Now, in answer to your question from my vantage point, when you have arguably, as Lance and I were saying, the best receiver in the league, that's your money guy. That's who you're going to go to. And now, conversely, when all your receivers are out and injured, as they are your starters, I mean, there was not one starting receiver in the game last week, with the exception of tight end Evan Engram. That being the case, then, yeah, you're going to lean on your running game more, you know, more so to try and get it more balanced. So if there's a, what's the expression, silver lining, the dark cloud business, maybe that is the silver lining in what has been a dark cloud season.
Well, Steve, I think if you look around the NFL, first of all, big-name receivers like Antonio Brown, Julio Jones, the targets are not that far off compared to what Odell Beckham was getting before he got hurt. So, I mean, any team that has a prolific wide receiver, you're going to force-feed that guy because you want him to get the attention to hopefully open things up on the opposite ends of the field. I think you bring up an interesting point, though. How does the offense change when Beckham is fully healthy, given the fact that they've picked things up on the ground? ground. They've run for over 100 yards in five of the last six games. That's a good problem to have, though, because the running game had been very up and down when Beckham was healthy. So if they can continue this success on the ground, I think that's a good issue to have, where they'll have more balance on offense. And then all of a sudden, remember, keep in mind, when Beckham was healthy, what all defenses did was they played two high safeties, and they basically dared the Giants to run the football. That's what they did. Right. That's what all defenses are doing last season, Steve. So now, if you have a running game, now it's very difficult to play two safeties back because you have to account for the run. So I think that if they could continue this running game going into next season, that could bode well to now force defenses to give the Giants different looks, whereas in previous seasons, defenses said, hey, you have to run the football. Until you can prove you can run the football, we're just going to focus on Beckham down the field, and we're going to take away the deep ball.
And I think it's, like you said, a great problem to have. My concern is coming up in the contract year this year, next year, is that, you know, is our team going to take a look at Beckham and say, hey, you know what, we've been pretty prolific running this ball over the last four or five games, the rest of the season. Does he deserve to get paid what he deserves to get paid, and is that going to ruin a relationship? Or does he want to be a New York Giant? Is he going to take a hit to be a New York Giant? You know?
Steve, I think you're dreaming on that. There will not be any question of the money he's going to get, nor the – listen, the team is 2-8. The Giants management, the Giants team, coaching staff, players to a man know just how valuable Odell – you heard who said it? Was it Jay Gruden? What's the biggest problem with the Giants this year? Beckham. He's not playing.
They've had injuries,
There is no question about him getting his money, his value to the team, what he's worth. So don't even – that to me is a non-starter. It's a no-brainer.
Well, and Steve, here's the other aspect of that. You know, you talk about the value of any player. Part of the value of a player is not just what he does from a statistical standpoint. It's the attention that he receives when he's not getting the football. So, you know, just because Odell Beckham, let's take your hypothetical, maybe his receptions are slightly down because they have a little bit more balance next year, you're still not accounting for then what he does to open things up for the rest of the field. I'll give you an example. Julio Jones this year for the Falcons, his numbers are down this year. Yeah. If you look at it from a statistical standpoint. So if you're Atlanta's front office, if you're Arthur Blank, their owner, do you now say, oh, well, Julio Jones is not valuable anymore because he's getting five catches a game as opposed to seven? No, because Julio Jones still needs to be accounted for by every defense. Yeah. Beckham is in that same boat.
Yeah. Well, do you think he's the type of player that will commit and say, you know, I'm not going to, because he's begging for receptions last year. I mean, he was upset because he wasn't getting the ball.
Well, but you know what? But Steve, you could say that about every great wide receiver in the NFL. If I walked up to them and I said, are you happy with how many targets you got? Are you happy with how many receptions? They'd probably tell me, no, I would have liked five more catches in this game. And that's the hunger of every player. And that goes back to what Russ and I were talking about earlier in the program. So I don't necessarily think that's unique to Odell Beckham compared to the rest of the top receivers.
I mean, like, Steve, to me, if that's the Giants' biggest problem going into next year, boy, they're going to be very, very happy with that. You know, one other thing, Steve, and thank you for the call, buddy. You got to remember something, that I don't think it's a coincidence that the running game has also improved as the offensive line has seemed to gel.
Synonymous with one another.
I mean, you know, again, we were talking about before, the shin bones connected to the knee bone, to the thigh bone, to, you know, the keister, whatever you want to call it. Let's now go to Union City and check in with Devin. Hello, Devin. How you doing today, buddy?
Hey, how you doing, Ross? How you doing?
What's going on? You got Lance with me. What do you have for us?
Hey, Lance. How you doing, Lance?
Doing all right, Devin. How's things with you?
Yeah, good. The one issue that I'm having, like, with McAdoo is I'm just afraid, and I'm sure most people feel the same way, is that once Beckham is back and once you have Shepard and then you have Ingram, he's going to stick with 11 personnel again and stop with committing to the run, which he did say that's what he loved about Sullivan, is that he commits to the run. He said that.
Yeah, he did say that.
That's what most people are afraid of. He's going to revert back to 11 personnel because he has Odell Beckham, and he's a pass-happy coach, and that's what we are all afraid of. And if he does that, it's not going to be pretty.
Well, Dev, I don't know. You're speaking in terms of generalities. I haven't heard this narrative that – That's what most – I haven't heard people, you know, they haven't been calling in saying that's what we're worried about. They're going to go back to passing. I mean, listen, when you have a
Somebody just said that yesterday on the show. They were just talking about it.
Oh, okay, but you're saying most people. I'm sorry. I don't hear most people saying we're all worried.
You didn't hear anybody.
Dev.
And, I mean, it was on this show yesterday.
Dev. You're not going to say, listen, you have Odell Beckham Jr. You have
Sterling Shepard.
You have Evan Engram. I don't know what's going to be with Brandon Marshall.
We'll see. You don't know what the personnel grouping is.
You're talking about you have cannons there. You understand? When you have cannons, you want to light the cannons up.
Well, Devin, it goes back to the point, just picking up of where Russ left off, about how when you have all of those playmakers from a coaching perspective, the last thing you want to do is keep them on the sideline. You want to keep the guys that are constantly going to make plays on the field. And you could still run the ball even with those guys on the field because, you know, let's not forget, first of all, Rhett Ellison, I think his reps have increased as a result of the injuries, but they've played two tight ends, and they could still very well put two tight ends on the field and keep guys like Odell Beckham on the field as well. I wouldn't look at it as, oh my God, Odell Beckham's healthy and now they're going to abandon the run. First of all, we got to wait and see what the makeup of the roster is going to look like next season before we start speculating. But I think that it's encouraging that not all the time when they've had a fullback on the field, not all the time where they've had two tight ends, sometimes with just the offensive line, that they've been able to run the football bodes well for when Beckham comes back and maybe they do keep 11 personnel on the field, that they don't need to always have two tight ends and a fullback on the field. That's what's promising about this season thus far.
And, you know, Dev, listen, I'm thrilled, thrilled with, you know, the improvement in Darkwa. But let's, as Bill Parcells used to say, let's hold off before we put a bust of somebody in Canton. You know, we're not talking about Jimmy Brown and Gale Sayers just yet. Okay?
I'm not saying anything about Darkwa being a Hall of Famer.
No, I'm just saying we want a balanced attack. We all agree we want a balanced attack. Okay?
That's it. Yep, that's what it is.
All right, buddy.
That's what I just hope they keep doing it.
Okay.
I love you guys. Thank you very
You got it, Devin.
Thank
Appreciate
you,
the phone
pal.
Call.
Happy Thanksgiving, buddy.
You know, the other thing, Russ, before we head back to the phone lines that I just wanted to add, we also need to be careful when we talk about, you know, how things play out down the stretch here, that they'll be able to just easily carry over to your point about Darkwa having a small sample size, because look at what happened to the defense this year. The defense played so well last season, and that didn't just carry over.
You know, for all the shots – and I'm sure you've taken it on your shows here, for all the shots that the offensive line, because, you know, in particular, Eric Flowers was the whipping boy. He was the problem for world peace, you know, and the division in this country.
Yes.
They blamed Eric Flowers for everything. The mystery of the season has certainly been the defense. What happened to it? Speaking of which, Landon Collins, who is also having his problems, NFL Defensive Player of the Week. So congratulations to him. Well deserved. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, there's been a lot of issues, in particular on the defensive side. But, I would not be – everybody, I don't care if, you know, if you have five Jerry Rices on your team, everybody wants a balanced attack. But when you have weapons like that, you're going to use those weapons. And you're going to want to use those weapons. You know, they're your main guys. When, you know, Lance brought out the most important point. If he doesn't catch a ball, people like Julio Jones and people like A.J. Green and people like
Antonio Brown and Steelers.
Brown and Odell Beckham Jr., they make everybody aware. It opens things up for everybody else. That, to me, is why the running game, quite frankly, and I think a lot of it is tied to the offensive line's improvement, because with Odell Beckham not in there, the running game is still running,
which
that's
is impressive.
Pretty impressive.
I agree with you, Russ, because you're right. You don't have somebody on the field consistently that if you're an opposing defense, you're going up against the Giants, you're not doubling Roger Lewis.
No.
You're not doubling Tavarius King. If anything, you're worried about Evan Engram, I would think, at this point.
Without question.
But outside of that, they're not bringing the attention towards one specific receiver. So the fact that they're still running the football under those circumstances, that's why I pointed out, that's encouraging. So that if Beckham comes back, you figure, okay, hey, there's no reason why they can't at least continue to open things up on the ground. But it says a lot about the offensive line. And let's not forget, Russ, we're now finishing up a game in which it was the seventh different alignment for this offensive line. Seven different alignments in 10 games. It's unheard of. And they could very well have their eighth different one heading into this game.
And I think any and every coach in the National Football League will tell you, chemistry on the offensive line is more important than chemistry any place else on the team. I mean, you know, defense is different. You know, everybody's got to be on the same page. But that chemistry, you know, from the center passing the ball, handing the ball to the quarterback, the running, everything. You know, it's a mandate. If you're going to have success, it's going to start with the offensive line. 201-939-4513, the number. On Twitter, it is hashtag Giants Chat. Let's go to Queens and speak with Travis. Travis, how are you today?
Hey, fellas. How you guys doing?
Good. What's going on, Travis?
Ain't nothing. I'm Russ. We spoke Monday, but just to a part two of my question is, like, and you guys were speaking of the offensive line and Everett Flowers. Do you think that, like, you know, Jerry Reese, he can hold his hat on Everett Flowers to say, look at the improvement, Evan Engram, you know, he's coming along. And like you said, the running game and everything's been, you know, moving along with the part of not having Odell Beckham.
Well, when you say holding hanging his hat on that, what do you mean? That, like, he could just say, like, see, I told you so?
No, as far as, because, you know, like, we all, well, I was thinking under the impression, like, you know, he's out the door come next year.
No, I told you this the other day when we were talking. Anybody, I don't have any inside information here. I'm telling you the truth. But I could tell you this, anybody who thinks it's a foregone conclusion that changes are coming, you're crazy. There is no foregone conclusion, and if there was, then John Mara would not have issued the statement. And quite frankly, if this team improves and the guys keep playing, if you see a lot of what you saw last Sunday
against the Chiefs,
you're going to see people back.
Right.
And there's no reason why they wouldn't be back. You know, the one thing, you know, Trav, when I got you, and I'm going to ask Lance here, but you stay on because I want you involved in this too. The one thing bothers me, and I'm in that locker room every day, okay, with maybe the exception of Mondays because it's an off day and we're on a conference call. But I'm there all the time. This business, and this is not because they're coming off a win. This business that he lost the team, McAdoo, is a bunch of crap. Flat out crap. It's just not true. And quite frankly, when you saw them perform the way they did, and if you saw them in the locker room after the game, patting the coach on the back when he's walking through, when you are losing and having a miserable season, nobody is happy. Everybody's pissed off. And they're supposed to be.
Well, I think it's a convenient media narrative
under those
circumstances.
It is.
And I'll remember the storyline. It relates to the game coming up tomorrow. I think it was two seasons ago. The Redskins seemed to be in disarray down the stretch of the season. And there was something similar circulating, Russ, in the locker room.
You're right.
That Jay Gruden lost the locker room. And then you had guys answering questions nonstop. You go back. I believe it was 2 years ago. And they were hammering. DeSean Jackson was still on the team. Kirk Cousins and constant questions, you know, is this team in disarray, disconnected? Why did that come up? Because the Redskins were losing football games.
When you lose, all goes bad.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, go ahead. I'm sorry, Trav. Go ahead.
I was going to ask this question. Like, Jerry Reese versus, let's say him and Ernie Accorso, like what's the time spent in Giants organization with both of them? How many? Because this is Jerry Reese's like 10th year, right?
A 10th or 11th.
Well, I can look that up to be specific if you want the exact years. Yeah. But he served under Ernie Accorsi, to your point, Travis. I mean, he was a big part in terms of running the draft and advising Ernie Accorsi. So when Jerry Reese took over as GM, when he took over as GM, it wasn't like all of a sudden this was his first year within the Giants front office. He had been established there well before.
Believe me, they knew all about Jerry Reese, and he was their first choice because they knew so much about him. This is his 11th season.
Yeah, he goes back with the Giants. Just to give you an idea, he's been with them since 1994 when he was a college scout.
Wow.
Then he took over as a pro scout in 97. He was the director of player personnel starting in 04, and then he took over as GM in 07. So from 04 to 07, he's the director of player personnel while Ernie Accorsi is the GM, and he is helping consult with a variety of different personnel decisions.
You know, let me tell you something else, Travis. Jerry Reese has really thick skin. The heat from the media, and I'll be frank with you, I think that's part of the problem that the media has both with Jerry and Ben. They want to get, not everybody. A lot of people want to get under their skin. And when you lose them, they don't like, and they can't. And that pisses people off. It really does. I'll tell you. Travis, I was sitting in the press conference after the game, post-game press conference, sitting there waiting for Ben McAdoo, Lance, to come in. As I'm sitting waiting, I'm like eyeing this one and this one and this one. And they're making snarky remarks. Because you know what? Ben McAdoo screwed up their narrative.
Well, because they won a game.
They won!
Of course. So what are you going to ask them now? You can't ask them the same questions.
Yeah. Are you embarrassed? Well, what's the difference between embarrassed and disappointed? No!
What was your message at halftime?
That's what it was.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, Trav, so that's the way it is.
Because one of my highlights, and I'm going to say this and get off, one of my highlights of Ben McAdoo his first year, one, I love his attitude. Because like we were just saying, he was even killed. But the highlight to me that stands out is when we lost to the Packers in the playoffs. And they asked him, how do you judge the season? And he said, so we didn't win. So we didn't put the fifth ring in the trophy case.
Right.
You know, and he could have easily said, for my first year, I'm ecstatic. You know, things is looking up. But that was his first answer, and I was like, wow, that says a lot for your head coach to say. You know, and he's like you said, he's even killed. So I think going forward, things have his ups and downs. But I think it's gonna get brighter. And he's a young coach, so we kill him. You know, like we used to kill Coughlin, and you know what I mean. Like look what happened. So I think we react too fast.
That's the nature of sports in general. You know that, Travis.
And the other part of this is, and Travis, appreciate the phone call.
Thanks, buddy.
Right, thank you.
The coach that takes over for a veteran like Tom Coughlin, Russ, is always going to be compared to his predecessor. And Coughlin,
everybody's compared.
But specifically a guy like Tom Coughlin, he helped win two Super Bowls, what he did with the Jaguars before he came. And also, the thing about Coughlin was Coughlin had a very sarcastic tone. From just being around him at his press conferences, he would give the media a little bit back and forth. And I think fans saw that from time to time. The media saw that. So then when a new coach comes in, you're wondering, well, what's his identity going to be? What's his personality going to be? And McAdoo's very different from Tom Coughlin. So he doesn't provide the same back and forth because he's his own person. So that's what I think puts McAdoo in a tough spot where he's going to be compared to Coughlin in terms of how he handled the media. And McAdoo's trying to build his own legacy and his own persona. So, that puts him in a difficult spot. But I think what's important to note is I always bring up Belichick in these conversations, Russ. He's a guy that has no personality. He doesn't give you much of anything in a press conference.
So somebody was saying when we had a discussion and somebody called up and was saying, McAdoo's weird. I said, okay, is Bill Belichick? He's not weird. If Bill Belichick was not winning, first of all, he couldn't get away with his attitude.
The standards would be different.
And I can tell you this right now, and I don't want to get off on a tangent.
But it's relevant to the conversation.
But the people who go back to the day when, he was the defensive coordinator here and Parcells left, and he wasn't made the head coach. Let me tell you something. Bill Belichick would not have been successful. I firmly believe this, and he is arguably, the greatest coach in history. He's certainly up there on the Mount Rushmore of head coaches in the NFL, that's for sure. But he and his personality could not have followed Bill Parcells. And you know what? He was not a home run hitter when he went to his first job in Cleveland as a head coach. But to follow Bill Parcells, a personality like that, sarcastic and this and that, but he owned the media because he knew how to handle it. Come on, you're without that. That is the best example. I'm so glad you brought that up because we were talking about that I don't know if it was Monday or last week, but Bill Belichick. I mean, come on. You want to talk about – and let's not also forget, you mentioned Tom Coughlin, Lance. Tom Coughlin wasn't winning the Warm and Fuzzy of the Year Awards.
When he first arrived.
Are you kidding?
Of course.
And
yeah.
he had a change too. So, listen, when you win, it's all good. Nobody was talking about anything about –
his personality, because you won 11 games. Now, all of a sudden, you just have two wins. All of a sudden, the perspective changes.
That's exactly the deal. All right, let's go nearby here in Jersey and speak with Hugo. What's up, Hugo?
Ah, good afternoon, guys, and happy Thanksgiving.
Same to you too, buddy.
Okay. Hey, before I get into my comments about Coach McAdoo, I wanted to talk a little bit about Jerry Reese and actually support Jerry. I mean, people think, you know, Jerry should be out there. Actually, I think the trend is up in his drafting. So people want to fire him. What are you going to do, fire him for the sins of 2011? I think the organization's taking a look at some of those mistakes and hopefully learn from them. And we really don't know the results of the draft until 3 years down the road. But, you know, he's drafted some pretty good players over the last few years. And keep in mind that the GM job is just not the NFL draft. I mean, he does a good job with pro personnel and with salary cap management and other aspects of the job. So, you know, when you evaluate somebody, you got to take the whole picture into account. So you got to be really balanced about it.
Hugo, you're preaching to the choir as far as I'm concerned. I don't know all of Lance's feelings, but I couldn't agree with you more. I think you have to look at the entire body, and I've mentioned this once before. Then I'll let you continue, Hugo.
Yeah.
Lou Lamoriello, who is now the general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs, for the longtime GM, the architect, to me, he's the best executive I've ever met in sports. And one thing he said to me, if you're going to be a good GM or president of any organization, you know, the one thing you cannot do when the fans and the media are flaming white hot and they're at your throat worse than ever and throwing everything they can at you, you cannot make your decisions based on those feelings. That's mm-hmm. when you have to have a thick skin. And I happen to think Jerry Reese is of that ilk. You have to be that way.
Well, and you know what? Real quickly, here you go, I'll let you continue. It goes back to one second, Hugo, I'll let you continue. To your point, Russ, it goes back to a few years ago when the Giants lost to the Jacksonville Jaguars. John Mara, and he said this comment on the record. He said, when I got on the bus, I wanted to fire everybody because he was so irritated that they blew that. It was a 21-0 lead they blew. And then what did he say? I realized I had to take a step back and wait till the end of the season and put things in perspective. So I think that's relevant. That's why the Giants gave out that statement and said, we're not going to evaluate and make any decisions until we see the complete process play out this year.
And Hugo, just before we have you continue, the situation, John Mara, the only reason he issued that statement was just so the media wouldn't every week continue writing the articles and lending to the speculation that something's going to happen. That's why he issued that statement. It wasn't like he didn't choose to, like, I want to do this. I'm going to shut everybody up. This is what it is. Don't bother me till the season's over. Continue, Hugo. What else you got for us, buddy?
Yeah, look, and when Jerry had his news conference, I think he said a lot of things that were actually very accurate. I know a lot of people rolled their eyes, but I think it's true. The roster is not devoid of talent. I mean, everyone agreed this was a talented roster coming into the season. And I think he made a statement about our offensive line not being all that much worse than others around the league. And talent-wise, and I think that's absolutely true. I mean, I watch a lot of football, and there's scarcity of talent on offensive lines. Now, maybe that dictates how you prioritize acquiring players in the draft, but, you know, there's just scarcity of talent. And then here's where I have the issue, and I count me in as one of the fans who have concerns about Ben McAdoo's scheme. And, I don't care if he's weird or whatever. I'm not his psychologist.
Oh, I'm not saying he's weird. Somebody called up and said that, so go ahead.
Yeah. You know, what I have concerns about is schemes. And if you look at the evidence and the trends, the offense wasn't very good last year. And through the first 4.5 games of this year, when he had his array of weapons, the offense wasn't very good. And that's really what causes us to be concerned. Can his scheme turn talented players into productive players on the field? And the trend just doesn't seem to indicate that's the case. I mean, you know, I may be more in the camp that for that system to work, you need a transcendental player such as an Aaron Rodgers or Odell. You know, Odell was always the great deodorant, right? You throw him a slant, he goes 80 yards. Without him, it would have looked even worse. So, you know, I'm just not sold that Ben McAdoo is a great offensive mind. That's sort of where I am, and I think a lot of fans are concerned about that. I know someone said before there's an army of fans out there with that opinion. Yeah, you're starting to hear that quite a bit. Actually.
Well, you're always going to hear that, though, when your team is 2-8, or they were 1-8 going into last week. So, I mean, if that's your opinion, you go, you know, that's your opinion. But remember something. The previous few years with him as your offensive coordinator, you certainly had Eli Manning was having some big years.
Well, and they were putting up points consistently.
Exactly.
So that's what I would throw out, Hugo. I mean, I think there maybe is some substance behind what you're talking about from 15 to the early stages, from 16, excuse me, to the early stages of 17 in terms of the production dropping off. But what that doesn't account for is when he was the OC – he was the OC here in 14. He was the OC here in 15. The Giants were near the top of the rankings in most offensive categories, so they were not struggling to put points up. It's over the last year and a half where things have taken a step back, and I think that's what maybe people are trying to figure out. So that would present to me that you have basically a mixed bag of results in terms of a good start over the first 2 years, and then the last 2 years, more mixed results.
I mean, in 14...
Lance, if I may, for a moment.
Yeah.
I remember Coach Coughlin clearly saying that for those first 2 years, the offensive system was a combination, essentially a merger of the best from
Gilbride, you're talking about?
System and McAdoo system. Ever since we've gone to the pure McAdoo system, the Green Bay West Coast system, the results on the field, and we talk in 21 games, it's sufficient evidence. That's not, you know, that's not an outlier or a very limited sample size. It's a fair good body of evidence, and I like to look at the longer-term trends and pictures. It's been pretty poor results offensively on the field.
Well,
with some pretty good talented players. I think, you know, franchise quarterback, a generational receiver, and so on.
But, you know, Hugo, you also have to take into consideration because, listen, you're going back to 14 and 15 – Eli was throwing for 4,410 yards and 4,432. But remember something else. The last 2 years, last couple of years, what was the issue? The issue was rebuilding the offensive line. So that has something to do with it as well. Listen, I've said this all season long. When you can't defend what the record is, okay? I mean, it's very hard to defend 2-8. And you're going to pick and look at things, but listen, a guy has made his money and his reputation as an offensive guy, and I'm you come on off an 11-5 season last season, and you want to know what? Let's go to that playoff game last season. That playoff game, there was a result of drops in that playoff game that would have been touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I hear what you're saying. Don't say I necessarily agree with you, but again, that's your opinion. And Hugo, you're entitled to it. Thank you for calling, and have yourself a happy, you and your family, a happy Thanksgiving, my friend.
Same to you guys.
Appreciate the call. One other thing, Russ, before we get back to the calls that I wanted to add to, he brought up the point about how the Giants' offensive line compared to other offensive lines across the NFL, that there's not major differences, not in terms of production, in terms of depth. So look at the Redskins, Russ. Five guys who started all banged up, right? So the Washington Redskins are now at the point where they got to dig into their depth chart to get starters out there. So you look at the fact that they put Spencer Long on IR. He's their starting center. They're turning to a rookie over the last few games that replaced him, Chase Roullier. Sean Lavau is out at left guard, and they're probably going to bring in Ty Nsekhe, who is also sort of a journeyman, a guy that's been on the team. But my point is, when most teams lose their starting caliber offensive lineman, whether it be center, left tackle, very rare that you have a Pro Bowler waiting in the wings to fill in. So that's where the Giants are on the same level as pretty much most NFL teams. See, we think as if other teams, Jason Peters goes down for the Philadelphia Eagles, Russ. He's their starting left tackle, right? Pro Bowler, right? Did Philadelphia have a Pro Bowler waiting to fill in? No, that's why they went out and they signed Will Beatty, who's been out of football the last 2 years. So I bring up that point to not make excuses for why the Giants' offensive line had been inconsistent. It's to say that the expectation to think that every team can afford to have five other offensive linemen behind the starters that are producing at the same level as the starters is completely misleading and off base when you look at the salary cap restrictions in the NFL, Russ, and you look at what other teams are working with. They're working with rookies. They're working with inexperienced players on the back end of the depth chart.
Well, nobody ever looks at, you know, Paul Dottino brings it up all the time. None of the fans ever look at the salary cap restrictions. We just want the guy on the team.
But it's got to work with the money. Madden. I know you're not arguing that would be my counter to anybody who thinks that way. It's not Madden football.
That is part of the business. And Hugo brought up also a point, some weeks back when Jerry Reese did address the media and he was talking about the offensive line. And, man, I'm sitting there in the auditorium and people in front of me, and I'm hearing and I'm watching the snickers, and they're talking about Eric Flowers. Well, I think he's coming along. No one's laughing about those remarks right now.
Yeah.
No one is laughing about those remarks right now. I mean, you're not happy with the record, but even the biggest critics have been calling up saying, yeah, you know what? Eric Flowers been playing pretty good. Yeah, Eric Flowers, the offensive line, yeah, pretty good, you know?
That's not the area to point the finger at.
No, not at all. And if you want to give Jerry Reese some more credit about the offensive line, he lost the starting center. He got a guy from Canada filling in pretty darn good, Brett Jones.
With Brett Jones.
Who is the most pleasant surprise on the team. I'd have to say the most pleasant surprise, because going into the season, if somebody would have said, Brett Jones is going to be a huge factor in this team, nobody would have said that.
Well, he filled in at times last year when Justin Pugh went down.
Yeah.
So we did see what he was capable of doing. Now he's got a more consistent role, and he stepped in.
He's vital.
They haven't taken a step back. I would throw one other name out there, not an offensive lineman, but I think it also says a lot about the job Mike Solari's done line coach.
And he was being crucified earlier this season.
And look at how many guys, Russ, he's had to shuffle in and out.
Bingo. That's exactly right. I mean, they were killing him.
Yeah.
I'm sure you were getting the calls.
Of course. A lot of people were critical because they were pointing, listen, that's the guy working with all of this group of players. And, you know, it's a reflection of the coaching. But now look at what he's done and the challenges that he's had to deal with on a week-to-week basis.
Charlie, up in Maine.
Oh,
how
boy.
Are you today, Charlie?
Here's where the show really turns,
hey,
Russ.
Happy Gratitude Day to you guys.
Gratitude Day. Very nice.
Hey, look, I got to set this record straight. Look, Jerry Reese doesn't talk to the media hardly at all, like twice a year. And when he has talked to the media, it does get under his skin. He doesn't like the criticism. He mumbles and he stumbles. And all you have to do is go back and look at the archives. And the thing is about Eric Flowers, remember, offensive tackle has to pass protect and run block. Eric Flowers is one of the lowest run blockers in tackles in the league by Pro Football Focus. He's like, he's got 31 rating. This guy cannot run block, and he's the biggest man on the line except for Fluker. So, and he's not even average as a pass blocker yet. Maybe he's getting close to average, but we can't say this guy has taken this incredible leap and he's this great offensive tackle now.
Well, but Charlie, in fairness, listen, I know you're still emotional that Will Beatty signed with the Eagles, so I'm going to give you a reprieve there. Nobody in our conversation here has been crowning Eric Flowers. That's not the point of the dialogue, but it would be ill-advised to overlook the fact that there has been improvement by him as an individual and the line as a whole. I mean, even an open-minded person, which I don't know if I'd put you in that category, should at least be willing to say, you know what, from where the O-line started to where the O-line is today, they've continually improved, specifically in terms of run blocking. They kept Eli Manning upright against a Kansas City team that had provided a lot of pressure over the course of the season. You didn't hear about Justin Houston. He came in with 7.5 sacks. I mean, all of those facts should take that into consideration, Charlie. In fairness, I think there has been improvement.
Totally,
and that's all we're pointing at.
Because we got rid of two guys on the line that weren't very good. Richburg and because Fluker came in, and we had got rid of Hart as our right tackle.
What about
we
Justin Pugh? Well, what about – but Pugh was out the last game.
I know. helps out. But he also, if you look at the Pro Football Focus,
here we go with Pro Football Focus.
It was terrible. All right. The reason why is Eli got the ball off very quick, and at least on the right side, he can see when Houston's coming at him. All you have to do is look at the tape. But I don't.
Well, but
I'll
tell you, but in fairness, Charlie, if you also look at the tape, and I go back and I watch, there was a pass that he threw to Travis Rudolph up the left sideline. And Brian Baldinger actually even broke down this pass, and you could go look at it on social media. The entire line gave Eli Manning more than enough time to survey the field.
No, it's been better. It's been better because we've
– hold on a second, Charlie. Charlie, hold on. Could you please repeat those words? It's been better. Charlie,
it's been better because we changed personnel.
Charlie from Maine said the offensive line, regarding the offensive line –
A rare statement.
Better. Mazel tov, Charlie.
You can't run block for huge.
All right.
We lost Charlie.
Sorry, Charlie. Well, we got to go shortly anyway. You have a happy Thanksgiving, my friend. I'm glad you. I didn't realize as soon as I heard your reaction. So he calls somebody else about the offensive line.
Oh, I didn't know if you had the pleasure of interacting with Charlie. Oh, okay, I was going to say yes. Well, Charlie's a character. I mean, listen, it's all fun and games. Yes. You know, we can't take each other too seriously. No. But obviously
Charlie's last name is Glass Half Empty. It's Charlie Glass Half Empty.
I can think of a couple of other terms. I thought you were going to go there, but you chose the PG-13 version.
Glass Half Empty, but a good caller nonetheless.
Yes, indeed.
All right. We got time for one or two more. Let's go to Mike in Florida. Mike, how we doing, buddy? Happy Thanksgiving.
Charlie in Maine started to touch on the topic that I have my friends calling me on. I can't see many of the Giant games, and Lance, you're the statistic guru. So you're going to help me out with this.
Sure.
They say that Eli is one of the fastest release quarterbacks in the league, and that's the reason why the Giant line has been improving, that Eli gets rid of it so quickly and that the Giants then don't have many, what they're calling yards after catches, because it's all real short passes.
Well, but I think let me just jump in here, Mike, and I'll let you continue. I mean, first of all, remember, Odell Beckham was responsible for a lot of the yak yardage because they were dumping off short passes to him, and he has the ability to cut and then all of a sudden break open for a big play. You don't have that player on the field anymore. So, I mean, you can't overlook that. As far as getting rid of the football quickly, a number of quarterbacks are getting rid of the football very quickly. I mean, that's just the direction of the NFL. And within the West Coast scheme, Ben McAdoo's scheme, you can look at Aaron Rodgers' numbers, Mike. You know, that calls for the quarterback to get rid of the football very quickly. Is it partially to make up for maybe some of the shortcomings on the offensive line? I don't disagree with you. I think that's certainly part of it. But I think the other aspect of it is that's what the system calls for. So it's a combination of both factors as to why he's been getting rid of the football quickly.
Okay. The other question I wanted is an observation from you guys. I heard from some of my friends that Eli is having a bad time throwing to these young receivers. From the snippets that I saw on NFL or Red Zone, what have you, it looks like he's getting the timing down with these guys now. He's getting familiar with them. What's your take on it?
Well, I think you're talking about Mike. Look what, and I don't want to. I'm not disparaging anybody, but you're talking about what was in the lineup last week. There were three backup receivers. I mean, there's a lot of work that needs to be done with exactly what you said, getting used to these people. You know, them getting used to him getting used to them. I mean, that is certainly a work in progress for anybody.
Well, and Mike, the other thing that I'll add is, and I think it's a very valid point. I agree. I think he is building chemistry with these receivers over the last few games. Go back to the Rams game. Eli Manning missed a number of wide-open receivers down the field. One in particular was Tavares King, if you recall, in the end zone. I found it interesting that after the game, Eli Manning said that was the first time that they ran that route at full speed in a game situation because they didn't have a lot of reps together. I'm talking about Eli Manning and Tavares King and some of these other receivers in practice. So, of course, it shouldn't surprise anybody. Yeah, it's going to take three or four games till Eli Manning builds that chemistry like he did with Odell Beckham and Sterling Shepard. So I don't think it's a coincidence that now the guys made plays in the last contest because it took a few games. When you go back to that Rams game, as I mentioned, he missed a number of wide receivers, and I think part of it was they just weren't getting that rep time in practice as he had with some of the other guys.
Got to run, Mike. Happy Thanksgiving, buddy.
Thanks for the call, Mike.
Thank
you. Got it.
You
as well.
You too. I mean, I really got a kick out of his. I saw your reaction. and Charlie from me.
Oh, of course, yeah.
It's the offensive line, but listen.
But it's all fun.
Let's hope the offensive line, you know, continues to improve. Let's hope it's all hands on deck tomorrow night in our nation's capital. You're talking about, like I say, 2-8 is what it is. But if they can grab tomorrow night, then I think they can get themselves a bit of a streak going. They're injured. The Redskins are injured.
Both teams banged up.
We will see what happens. But it's a Thanksgiving game. And hopefully for the Giant fans, putting life in perspective, which I'm sure you'll be able to be thankful for a Giants victory tomorrow night. If not, I'm sure Lance and myself will be hearing about it and all the other hosts next week. But that being the case, have yourselves a happy Thanksgiving. For Lance Meadow, I'm Russ Salzberg. Thanks for being part of Big Blue Kickoff here on Giants.com. We will see you next time. Again, happy Thanksgiving.
Have a good one.